Education Committee to order.
I do believe a quorum is present.
I know.
Everybody here with their bright shining faces. So, ready to go. And Senator Nelson, I believe, has our first bill up, the AmeriCorps Innovation Act.
Great.
All right.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. It does make a difference. It's just intellectually or emotionally to be. This is tough. I'm not. That's what you have somewhere.
Lots of paper. Lots of trees.
I haven't even checked because I'm sure it's the same for me.
Senator Nelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. Thank you for allowing me to bring Senate File 390 before you. Before I actually even describe the bill, I'd like to offer a delete-all amendment to get the bill in the shape that I would like to have it. I'd like to offer the A3 amendment. I hope all members have that.
I believe the A3 amendment was in our packet.
Yes.
Senator Nelson moves the A3 amendment to Senate File 390. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill is a bill that addresses something we've often talked about in this committee. Members, we have often mentioned the importance of making sure that every student is reading at grade level by grade 3. And we know that that's key not only to their academic success, but that's really key to their success throughout their lives. We need readers, and they need to be on grade level. And those of us who are in the education profession, I'm a reading specialist, we know that if you can get children before age 3, it's much easier to remediate and bring them up to grade level. After grade 3, it's much more difficult to convince students that, yes, they can read. So it's very critical. This is a critical time. This bill is the Serve America Innovation Act. It basically does 4 things, some not so significant, but some very significant when it comes to having students reading at grade level. I'll just briefly walk through the bill, and then I'll have our testifiers give you some firsthand experience. Part 1 renames the program to reflect how the money is used. Their $900,000 annual appropriation is leveraged to $3.15 million in federal AmeriCorps revenue. It's served in over 600 communities across the state. The second thing it does, it just aligns our language with the feds. But really, the meat of the bill is the sections that really require that the grant proposals are data-driven, research-based, and I think that's what really adds to the meat of this proposal. And then lastly, there's a small piece that increases the administration percent from 5% to 7%. It's not a significant amount of money, but again, it will help in leveraging additional funds. I've visited 2 of our AmeriCorps reading sites in Rochester. I would encourage you to get into your school districts if you've not had a chance yet. If you are fortunate enough to have Reading Corps in your district, I'd encourage you to visit that. It's one-on-one reading tutoring at the time when children need it most and can benefit the most. And with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to turn over the discussion to my testifiers today. And if you can introduce your, I'm not sure who wants to talk first, but thank you. Introduce yourself for the tape, please.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Audrey Suker, and I serve as the CEO of Serve Minnesota. And we're responsible for Minnesota's AmeriCorps programs, which are often referred to as a domestic Peace Corps. And I want to start by thanking all of you for your support over the years and to say that the reason we actually exist as an organization is to really be by your side and work by your side to help Minnesota solve unsolved problems like reading by third grade and like math proficiency and like graduating from high school, and the list goes on. We did separate from state government as an organization in 2002, and the reason that we did that was that we knew that we wanted to become a more nimble and entrepreneurial organization, and we also knew that we wanted to engage the private sector as partners in trying to help solve these unsolved problems, utilizing this precious resource of AmeriCorps, which can leverage, the leveraging power of AmeriCorps is phenomenal in terms of a dollar raised locally leverages $3.50 from the federal level. As soon as we separated from state government, the first thing we did was have a conversation with Alice Segrin when she was serving here in the legislature. What we said to her was, we know that this precious resource of AmeriCorps, where people are willing to give a year or two of their lives in service to their community for a modest living stipend and an AmeriCorps scholarship, could make a much greater difference for the state if it were more strategically aligned with state priorities. So at that time, she had the vision of marrying the people power of the AmeriCorps program with the science of how children learn to read. And we started, that was then actually the birth of the Minnesota Reading Corps. And since 2003, when the Reading Corps began, we worked with 700 children that first year. This year, we will reach over almost 18,000 children all across Minnesota from age 3 to grade 3. This program was incubated using the YouthWorks appropriation, which today we are proposing to change the name of that appropriation to the Serve Minnesota Innovation Act. And so that we can create a pipeline of programs that replicate the same kind of model that the Minnesota Reading Corps uses. In 2006, the state legislature and the governor, because the Reading Corps was evolved to the point that it was, actually created a line item, a separate line item, to support the acceleration of the growth of the Reading Corps. And as I said earlier, what the Reading Corps does is combine the people power of an AmeriCorps resource with the science about children learn to read. And it is that kind of science that the individuals that are with me today are going to speak to. And it is that same kind of science and that same kind of model that we are using to incubate programs that our intent is to bring to the same stature of the Reading Corps, incubating a program called the Minnesota Math Corps and incubating a program really designed to address the fact that too many Minnesota students are not graduating from high school on time or are not graduating from high school ready for college. You have in your handout a document that illustrates the kind of data we use to document our results, and it illustrates the kind of data we use to drive our continuous improvement. I'm not going to take the time to walk you through that right now, but I do want to draw your attention to it and to say that I'd be more than happy to meet with any of you individually to talk through that data in more detail. Even better than that, I'd love to have any of you that would like to come out on a site visit and see the Reading Corps in action and see the kind of data-driven, evidence-based programming that this is. And even better than all of that would be if this whole committee would want to come on a site visit. We'd love to arrange that. And then we could dive as deep as you'd like into the data and into the model. So with that, though, let me introduce the testifiers that are here with me today. The first is Katie Schaefer, who is a master literacy coach with the Rochester Public School District. The second is Christy Jo Sanders, who is a former Reading Corps AmeriCorps member herself and is now on staff with the Rochester Public Schools as an internal coach. And then lastly is Jean Beret, who is the reading coordinator for the Rochester Public Schools. So, Katie.
Thank you, Ms. Zucker. This is Katie Schaefer.
Madam Chair and members, I'm Katie Schaefer, the reading specialist and Minnesota Reading Corps master coach for the Rochester Public Schools. And I want to share with you today the impact of Minnesota Reading Corps in our district. Dr. Reed Lyon, who was named one of the 10 most influential people in American education during the past decade, states that reading failure isn't just an educational problem, it's a public health problem. The ability to read proficiently is significantly related to the quality of life and health outcomes. At Rochester Public Schools, we're disheartened by the ramifications that can happen when students can't read. We understand that reading proficiency is critical and our time to act is now. We're extremely pleased that Minnesota Reading Corps awarded our district with almost 20 members, providing reading service to over 700 students this year alone. Many students of whom, without this program, would fall through the cracks as no other support services are available to them due to budget cuts. We have found the program to be highly research-based and effective. On average, over the past 2 years, 76% of our students who exit Minnesota Reading Corps have passed our MCAs. But more than passing a test, this program provides reading skills, hope, and the confidence that children need to be successful in school and, more importantly, later on in life. At a recent visit, a coach shared with me how awesome it was to see the children raising their hand in class before participating in this program never would have done that. Fortunately, this is a story I get to hear time and time again at each site across our district. And if you ask our children what they like about Minnesota Reading Corps, they'll tell you straight up, it makes me smart. I'd like to leave you with a quote from one of our members, Nicole Anglin. She writes, MRC had a great impact on me in that I experienced firsthand as a mom whose son receives service and now as a member. This program can give a monumental boost to kiddos that would otherwise not get any service in reading skills. In very little time, the MRC interventions not only begin to improve reading fluency, but more importantly, the confidence level in our kids. I have seen kids physically sit up straighter and prouder when they're given a chance to be successful. It carries over to everything they do. I've seen students try things they wouldn't normally try, make better choices in friends, become more responsible with their homework, and be excited to read on a daily basis. The program, the interventions, the teacher's support from Churchill Hoover has been so beneficial to kids. The program is so successful here that we almost have every third grader reading fluently. The program is working. It's very powerful. End quote. I'm confident that you're also concerned about the quality of life for our children, and I urge you to be part of the powerful force that helps them support Minnesota Reading Corps.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Christy Jo Sanders. I'm a reading specialist, a Minnesota Reading Corps internal coach, and past Minnesota Reading Corps member for the Rochester School District. I would like to share with you today the family impact of the Minnesota Reading Corps in our district, along with the personal impact that it had on me. Beyond helping students, our Minnesota Reading Corps members have engaged our families in numerous ways. Several members have planned literacy activities for families taking advantage of our after-school programs, literacy nights, and our summer lunch program. Yet other members provided literacy activities in our weekend backpacks filled with food for our hungry school children. Members could also be found engaged in activities such as Jumpstart's Read for the Record Day, parent efficacy trainings, and summer reading programs. As a past Minnesota Reading Corps member last year, I wrote a grant with my coach to provide books and literacy activities for children to practice their reading skills over the summer. This was an effort to prevent the summer slide. Children were excited to receive 6 books at their reading level, along with literature regarding various other free literacy opportunities and events in our community. Reading Corps has compelled me to reach out and become an active community member helping families. I attended local school board meetings and even city council meetings. I took part in Running Start for School, which provides free school supplies to children in need. After almost 10 hours of organizing school supplies, I was exhausted. Moments later, I watched as families poured through the door to help their children get prepared for a new school year. Just to see their eyes light up as they picked out their perfect school supplies is an experience I will never forget. Reading Corps is more than helping students become better readers. I knew that Reading Corps was going to help change lives. I never dreamt that the life that would be changed would be mine.
Thank you, Ms. Sanders. And Jean Beret?
Yes. Madam Chair and members, I'm Jean Beret, the District Reading Coordinator for the Rochester Public Schools. I would like to share with you today the community and overall impact that the Minnesota Reading Corps program has on our district. The Minnesota Reading Corps program goes beyond helping children in our school and extends to a rich outreach and partnership within our community. Last year alone, Rochester members logged almost 10,000 hours in addition to tutoring students. Our Minnesota Reading Corps members can be found actively engaging in various activities throughout the community. Members have made fleece hats and scarves for our children, wrote a middle school summer curriculum for the Olmsted County Historical Center, crocheted baby blankets for families in need, and volunteered with United Way's winter outerwear program, packed Christmas boxes for Operation Christmas Child, and helped with flood relief cleanup. One member is even offering a free whole arts after-school music program for children based on the pedagogy of Carl Orff, which is supplemented by folk games and tales and from this and from other countries. And the list goes on and on. In summary, Minnesota Reading Corps in Rochester is contagious. These dedicated members have done amazing things impacting our students, our families, and our community. Their dedication to service is second to none. They are an integral part of our community, and I can't imagine what our district, and more importantly, our 700-plus children would do without them. Our members have been well-trained in 10 highly research-based reading instructional strategies, which they carry out with fidelity daily. Their service to our district humbles us. The program is really about a $500,000 asset to our district that provides rich literacy opportunities to our children. Thank you to the Minnesota Reading Corps for offering such an effective and highly research-based program. Your assistance with our district mission, Lifelong Learning for All, is deeply appreciated. As Dr. Lyon stated, reading proficiency is significantly related to the quality of life. Minnesota Reading Corps has gone beyond our expectations. It has opened doors for our children. It has strengthened partnerships for our families and our community. It is often said that it takes a village to raise a child. Minnesota Reading Corps has been an amazing part of our village. Together, we are working hand in hand to ensure the best quality of life for every child in our district. Rochester Public Schools and Minnesota Reading Corps know that we cannot let our children down, and I know that you won't either. Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I might just add a couple comments, please. And just to kind of give the members who might not be familiar with the Reading Corps kind of a picture about exactly what that's like, I'll tell you, several weeks ago I visited our Reading Corps schools, and as a reading specialist, they didn't know it, but I went in with a pretty critical eye. I wanted to exactly see what was going on, and I will tell you I was very impressed. Our Reading Corps members visit with individual students for about 15 to 20 minutes. It's an intervention program where there are targeted interventions based on exactly what that student needs. Very data-driven. There was so much data garnered in that 15 minutes that I was amazed. The results are there. You can view the data and the results. But what I really noticed was the kids, and the kids loved it. They enjoyed succeeding, and you could just tell it was a great experience for the students as well. Just the experience of itself, but the fact that they are better readers is key. And I will tell you, we have a lot of intervention programs in education, and some of us on our education committee, we think we have so many different streams of funding and so many different programs. I will tell you, most of those programs don't kick in until a child's about 2 years behind in grade level. So if you're a Title I teacher, as I was, we couldn't work with the students that the Reading Corps is working with that are just beginning to struggle. So it's really a matter of timing, and what in the business world we'd call it just-in-time training. This is just-in-time learning. I'd like you to note there's not a fiscal note on this. Basically, we're just the key parts of this bill are in sections 5 and 6, where we're really adding some teeth as far as research driven best practices, data driven, and evaluation and communication, evaluation and analysis. So, are there any questions I should ask, Madam Chair?
Senator Bonhoeffer. Madam Chair, a comment, not a question. First of all, thank you so much, Ms. Zucker, for being here and bringing your organization here today. Thank you, Senator Nelson, for bringing the bill forward. We know that literacy, and this is obviously one of our chair's strong passions. And lastly, I have to point out that our former colleague, Senator Kathy Salzman, who shares Senator Olson's passion for reading, is now on the Serve Minnesota organization, and so we're just so thrilled to see her continuing that work in literacy.
Are there any other questions? Otherwise, I would like to make a comment. I had the privilege of spending some time over dinner on Friday evening with Dr. Reed Lyon, and he's an amazing gentleman, has a tremendous background. He was one of the co-developers of Reading First, and commended Minnesota for, you know, both their implementation of it, but also for the work that we have done. He was, when he was here visiting in Rochester, I think last year or the year before, I had a chance to be on a conference call with him, but I hadn't had a chance to meet him. And then Senator Salzman and I both had a chance to hear him give two keynotes on Saturday. The key, and I bring this up for one reason, we spent some time on Friday evening talking about the difficulty that Reading First ran into. Was that it got into, you know, political things, but the reality was the key is implementation. And, you know, you can have the research-based methods, and you can have the law or the construct, but it's how you implement it. And the elements of what are good implementation in terms of the leadership and the commitment, you know, the data, the engagement of people, the communication, all of those elements, I think, are exemplified in Reading Corps, which is why this is a model for a way to implement good practice in terms of achieving that reading by third grade. There may be other wrinkles on that, but I think we ought to not to lose sight of that model and ought to be supporting it. So you can tell where I come from on this. So I hope that you will. And Senator Salzman and I had a very good time working toward this end and learning an awful lot about the process, the barriers, the pushbacks, as well as the commitment there is and the recognition of how important reading is. And it's been tremendous to see all of the organizations that are getting on board with making reading proficiency by third grade as a priority. But the next step is how do you do that, and being sure that both the energy as well as the financial investments are done in a way that they're implemented so we get some return on it rather than just spending money and not really getting the results. And so thank you very much for testifying very well to the effectiveness of this model. So that it's not a question, but thank you very much for what you've done and Senator Nelson for carrying this legislation.
Madam Chair, what is your pleasure? Would you like me to move this for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill?
Why don't you just move it for inclusion?
Okay.
Is there anybody that's going to argue with that?
So moved.
Madam Chair, not to argue, but just another comment, if that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, great work, and everyone agrees. I had a daughter that was in AmeriCorps 2 years ago as a reading intervention specialist in a nearby St. Paul school, and she's now a counselor, but a great part of her life, but it was even better. You know, all the sharing, and she continues to see these people. It's exactly what's needed. We have experts here from Rochester. If you could share, what do we need to do to get at 100% reading proficiency in the Rochester school system? Is that a realistic goal as we talk about that? Is it realistic? Do we need additional resources? Just expand on that, as we will no doubt have further discussions on that point.
Ms. Brown.
And that's why I think this program is so critical to continue. That's one thing that's really helped us to catch those children before they fall. So often with special education and everything else, you wait until they're 2 years behind, and how do you catch them up then? So we have to have something in place that we can catch those little ones, whether they're in kindergarten, first, second, third grade, to get them up to grade level. So anything we can do to provide that time, resources available to the districts, that would really be helpful. And this really does it. This really helps.
Senator Nino.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I got a question. This may be better directed at staff, but I just wanted to find out what is in the repealer, section 124D.38, subs 4, 5, and 6.
Madam Chair, Senator Nino, that relates to three definitions. Participant, I don't have it in front of me. There's a sheet, actually, that got passed out referencing those. Okay. Mentor, participant, and placement, and those are definitions specific to the YouthWorks program that's obsolete now.
Thank you. Thank you.
Ms. Suker, Senator Nelson has indicated that there's no fiscal impact to the bill. What kind of demand for this program is there that you're experiencing around the state? Is there a need for expansion of it? Or what's your vision in terms of this program and its continued implementation?
Madam Chair, thank you for the question. Actually, our vision is that we would be able to take the Reading Corps to scale, meaning we could reach every child in Minnesota that needs the Reading Corps in order to succeed. And we don't have a fiscal note with this bill, but if there ever were a situation where additional dollars were a possibility for this kind of effort, we have done some thinking about that, as you can imagine, and have concluded that with an additional investment of $4.1 million, we could actually, over the next 2 years, reach 18,000 more children than we would otherwise be able to reach, and to do that with 1,000 Reading Corps members all across Minnesota making that happen. So in the best of all possible worlds, we would love to be that kind of resource to the state to help reach that many more children that need the Reading Corps.
And Ms. Hooker, does the federal match continue? Is that a bottomless pit, or what is the potential for expansion or at least continuation with that particular source of revenue?
Madam Chair, I totally believe that the federal match would continue, and the reason that I believe that is that this program now has a national stature. In that other states are paying attention to the work that we're doing here and are eager to replicate it. We were recently invited to an Annie E. Casey-sponsored event in Washington, D.C. to hold this up as an example. So while there are not unlimited AmeriCorps resources, this program is consistent with the kind of data-driven, evidence-based programming that the Corporation for National Community Service and that all policymakers would like to see replicated. So that's where my confidence comes from in terms of the continuing capacity to leverage the federal resources.
And Ms. Suker, in addition to the $4.1 million, was that combination of funds, or
no,
are you talking about a state investment that would be required for that?
Madam Chair, that would be an increase in the state investment over above the existing appropriation, which is now at $1.375 million a year. It also assumes that we would continue to leverage the private investment of about $1.1 million every year, which is a very ambitious annual goal in terms of private investing.
Thank you very much. Any further questions?
If Madam Chair, could I just make one more comment? The senator that he asked before, one other thing that I thought of right away was professional development of our teachers. If we want to really improve teaching in our schools, and we've been working very hard with the Minnesota Department of Education and Carrie Ross, and what we could do to better educate our teachers pre-service-wise and also once they're out to continue those conversations. So I think that's another key point that would help to better serve our children and get them to proficiency.
Madam Chair, may I ask just one brief follow-up? Anyone that may want to answer, do you believe in social promotion if a student has not demonstrated proficiency?
For me personally, no, because so much research has been done that, in fact, I just finished doing 7 presentations to our Parents Are Important in Rochester, which is our preschool parents that come to us in the district, and many of them ask what to do. If we can catch them before they enter kindergarten, we know that if those little ones are not quite ready to be there, academically they might be ready, but socially and emotionally possibly not. And with what's coming down the pike with our Common Core, new Common Core standards, we're raising the bar even further. So if a child really is not ready for school, it's better to keep them into a preschool program before entering kindergarten. Once they're in school, so much research is done. There have been, in my 30-some years of teaching, I probably have had 3 children, I could say, that did okay repeating a grade. Others, socially, self-confidence-wise, I don't know that it really helped them all that much. But if we could catch them before, I said I would be a rich woman for every person or every parent that said to me, I wish we would have waited and not sent our child to kindergarten and waited a year. I said, never in my 30-some years of teaching have I had a parent say, I wish we would have sent them. So I think that's really key.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, would you? Might I introduce, we have actual Reading Core volunteers in the audience, I believe, in the red. So thank you.
Very good. Senator Nelson renews her motion. Or did you make the motion?
I'll move that we include this bill in the omnibus bill.
Okay. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Very good. You did the right thing. The motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So.
Maybe it's just bad money. That's the difference.
Bobby's with a very...
No, it's a match.
Is it a match? Oh, dear.
Okay. She worked a lot.
Thank you.
No, I know what you're saying.
Here's the one.
Here's the one. 1983.
Well, now that you know that.
This is the right one.
Another very, very good.
This is for 10 and 11. We'll have to.
She's getting ready to do her bill. She's
next. I don't know if we do that. This bill doesn't
Can you read? I can't read it.
Oh, this changes the omnibus bill.
Yeah, it's on the reading court. I
have no
reading
course. I
just can't read.
Those read type policies.
Some kind of
younger grades, but.
See the big letters. I don't know what they say.
And
if it's the closest pictures outside.
You're in the committee.
Yeah, it is.
Where's Carla?
She the nurse? She's taking pictures.
Hey, I'll stop. We're Rochester.
Oh.
She's waiting for Carla.
Rochester?
Yes.
Just three. No, just two.
Here's the preferred. We have people present.
I am right now. I'm
okay.
I'm reading a letter that yes. She wants me to get to her. We'd be
all right.
Back and forth. And I am sorry. Yeah.
Senator Olson, it looks like we're playing some musical chairs here today.
Yes.
I believe you have a Senate File 636 to present. Is that correct?
That's, yes. I've got everything I've got. It's got the House file number on. I apologize. I do not.
Senate File 636.
I don't have with me the delete all amendment that I need. I was getting too excited about everybody learning to read by third grade and lost
and,
my focus.
Members, while Senator Olson is getting her delete all amendment, I just want to kind of brief you. We have a lot on our agenda today, and we want to make sure that we are able to hear from all of our testifiers. So our thought for our process is first we'd have presentation of the bill, then we'd listen to all our witnesses, and if you could kindly hold on to your questions until all the witnesses have presented, and if you want to address it to a certain one, that's fine too, but if you could hold your questions until the end, please. Thank you. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 636 is a bill on teacher evaluation and professional development and recognition of performance as we work to achieve both the respect and the advancement of our teaching force and recognition of the effectiveness that they are able to deliver. And so evaluation has been a term that's been tossed around here. Everybody's talking about we need that. We need a recognition of performance. Well, this is a proposal that has been worked on by a number of entities, two of which are represented at the table here today. And I'm going to call on Mr. Bartholomew to help walk through this bill and explain it. There are two of the organizations that represent the Minnesota Chamber, Minnesota Business Partnership, the TASCA Project, and there's some others that are involved.
Yeah, McKinsey and the Bush Foundation is part of
MFI. McKinsey and the Bush Foundation. And we'll be hearing some more from others of those, but I'm going to take advantage of their presence here to walk through the bill that we have before us.
And Senator Olson,
I'd like to move the delete all amendment, the A1.
So moved. Okay. And our first testifier, Cecilia.
I think you still need to vote on it.
Oh, I'm so sorry. All those in favor of the delete all amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? No. Amendment adopted. Our first testifier is,
Ms. Rattel?
Cecilia.
Yes.
Ms. Rattel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rattel. My name is Cecilia Rattel. On behalf of the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and both myself and Jim Bartholomew kind of walk you through this. To start, I think the overview is probably the easiest way to do it, which is a colored chart, which is in all of your packets. It's a very big concept bill, so sometimes the colors make it easier to talk about. If you want to set that next to a document that Mr. Bartholomew has, that's all words, but it's front and back with the title Enhancing Teacher Effectiveness Through Evaluation. If you have those two in front of you, we'll be able to get through this year.
Very good. Cheer.
Okay. So starting out with the graphic, the main ideas of this bill are really broken down into four areas. And above the top where it's professional development, it's all about effective professional development, and this is the first piece for, you know, having an effective impact. But all of that is based on what's below it, starting in the green, the teacher appraisal framework, which is 50% based on student data and 50% locally determined. And the only requirements under the locally determined piece are two principal or administrator evaluations a year and a parent survey. Next, so from the green evaluations, that gives you an effectiveness rating, which is the 1 through 5, which is the blue section. And you can see that it's both the top 50%, the student growth data, and the locally determined, that you get a 1 through 5 rating, or it's based on how much growth you have. So to get a highly effective rating, you have to have at least a year and a half of annual growth and a 5 on the locally determined rating system. And you can read how that goes through down
Excuse
there.
Me, Madam Chair?
Senator Wieger.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Ms. Trella, I just wanted to get a clarification. Were teachers involved in putting together the evaluation model?
Ms. Trella.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Wieger. You will hear from some teachers that did take part and give us some, you know, suggestions of way to improve it. Mm-hmm. And we also used a lot of the surveys and there's a new teacher project. It's an orange document that's in there called Evaluations 2.0 or something like that. Okay. And that also surveyed a number of teachers. So, yes.
Madam Chair and
Senator Olson,
and Senator Wieger, in addition to what has been involved thus far, I think you'll find that the teachers are actively engaged in what goes on in terms of the local structure and process as well.
Ms. Rattel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So there's two other kind of key areas that the blue section or the effectiveness rating will allow for superintendents to do. The first one in that box is it allows for superintendents to place teachers in front of students that they believe best meets the students' needs. This is a provision that clearly puts the students first, which is something that we know we need to be doing. And they have to stay within the same district, but it's very clear that this is all about the students. Secondly, there's a rising star provision which allows superintendents to exempt teachers who are able to provide instruction that similarly provided licensed teachers cannot provide. So this is a teacher that's coming up through the ranks and, you know, is in the same category as another one, but they are considered a rising star. So it really allows the superintendent to make decisions based on that local district that, once again, are best for the students. Based on these effectiveness ratings, from that each teacher is then designated with a status designation, and that's the red section. So if you start out, the standard status is what teachers will start at, and to move from there to the advanced status, they have to have 4 out of 5 years of an average rating or higher. And then to move to the distinguished status, you have to have 3 out of 5 years of highly effective. And for teachers that earn that, they also get a 10% salary bonus. And to get the exemplary, it's 7 out of 10 years of highly effective. So this also builds in some of the seniority concerns and changes of tenure. Also, if there are similarly situated teachers in the same status designation, it is then based on seniority. So it kind of makes up for both of those, but allows, once again, for the superintendent to make a lot of decisions. Then from there, in the yellow section in the bottom right corner, it discusses school board employment decisions, which are two different types of decision points, one being unrequested leave, or what's commonly known as layoffs. Teachers would be released in order from, you know, kind of the least effective up. This is called last in, first out. LIFO is what it's commonly referred to as. And there is actually a document in your packets from the New York Times that Michelle Rhee wrote about a very similar law that's going through in New York right now, talking about how these practices really aren't at all, you know, improving the teaching profession and how instead it results in a lot of younger teachers being laid off more often just because of the nature of it. And below that, every 5 years, the board's decision will be based on the teacher's progress on their professional development plan and the teacher's effectiveness rating. In addition to those, so those are kind of the four overarching things that are going on that are all based on effectiveness and their impact with students. The bill also calls for two studies, the first one being the impact that a culturally, racially, and ethnically diverse teaching faculty has on the educational outcomes of minority students, and secondly, district strategies for recruiting a culturally, racially, and ethnically diverse teaching faculty. So with that, I think I'll hand it over to Mr. Bartholomew.
Mr. Bartholomew.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership, and we'd also like to thank Senator Olson for carrying this small, non-controversial bill and the committee as well for your consideration. I think what I'll do is just go through some of the particular provisions within the bill, show you where they are, and then I'll be going off of this one-page sheet that tries to get the highlights. And the first few pages of the bill talk about trying to coordinate teacher professional development activities. You know, oftentimes there's a program for professional development here for a particular purpose, another over there. This tries to knit them all together so that they're coordinated around effectiveness. The key parts of the bill will be Section 6, teacher evaluations and the appraisal framework. And as Ms. Rattel mentioned, that the basic structure is 50% would be based on student academic achievement growth and 50% based on district determined factors with two exceptions. One is you'd have to have a principal's evaluation as well as parent surveys part of that second 50%. And you'll see that on Section 6, and then there are clauses, the 50% growth is B, C, and D, and the 50% locally determined is E. So that's kind of the elements. And then Subdivision 3 gets into using the results of student growth in the local evaluation framework to start to designate teachers. And then you'll see on under sub 3, number 1 would be highly effective, and that's an individual teachers whose students are growing a year and a half or more and have also received the highest rating on the district's determined measures. Then you have effective, a teacher whose students grow a year or more and received a 4, and on down from average, needs improvement, and ineffective. And we were using the standards developed by the New Teacher Project, which talked about you need more than a lot of evaluation policies just have satisfactory or not satisfactory. And not surprisingly, 90-something percent are satisfactory. One of the standards recommended was to have multiple 4 or 5 levels or distinctions, and that's what you see reflected here. Subdivision 4, based on those effectiveness ratings, gets you into a status designation. Most people will start, as a standard designation. But over time, as you have a 5-year contract, to move from standard to effective, you need to be effective or better 4 out of 5 years. In other words, you need to have your students grow at least 0.9 or more years in a row, 4 out of 5, and you'll move up to the effectiveness rating. If you then, over time, in 3 out of 5 years, your students can grow at 1.5 years or more. Again, 3 out of 5 years, you would be highly effective. And then to be exemplary, you would have to do that for 7 out of 10 years. And again, the idea is to recognize, first is to evaluate and help professionally grow classroom teachers. And then the idea behind all of this is then to recognize teachers who excel in the classroom. Not to get too much more into the weeds, but you'll just see Section 5 is an area where the department would help school districts in working with the student data and linking to teachers. Subdivision 6 is some of the reports that would go to the department. And again, individual teacher data that would be reported is private. Most of the rest after that, Section 7, is staff development. Section 8 is staff development. Section 9 is, again, an effort to coordinate staff development for building principals. They, as you all know, have a critical role in this, and we just want to try to pull and knit together what schools do for principals to make that a part of this. And then Section 10 is the timeline. You'll see that in 2011-12, districts would be asked to develop a framework. 2012-13 would be a pilot year, and 2013-14 would be its first implementation year.
This is the bill.
All right. To do a little jumping around, but I'll try to keep it at a minimum. In addition to trying to recognize teacher excellence through the designations, we've also on page 23, so you don't have to jump there, but teachers who reach a distinguished license would receive a 10% bonus on their salary for as long as they retain that status. Teachers who earn an exemplary designation receive a 20% salary bonus. Before fiscal notes get too carried away, we need to let this play out. At first year implementation is 2014. You can't get to one of those designations for at least 5 years. So 2019 is the first time that would kick in. But we not only wanted to recognize teachers both by the designation, but also to a degree financially.
Madam Chair, Mr.
Senator Olson,
I think you used a term in that was actually changed in the Delete All Amendment, referring to it as a license.
Oh, yes. No, I'm sorry.
Mr. Bartholomew, do you want to clarify, please? Then?
Pardon?
Did you need to clarify something?
Senator Olson is correct. This does nothing
in terms of licensure. That has been there was in the original bill, but that has been removed.
Thank you. All right.
Sorry.
Mr. Bartholomew.
Then to jump ahead to page 13, and I'll just go a little bit more quickly since those were the real guts of it. But in terms of trying to help school districts retain their most effective teachers, and again, you may have seen there's a document in there from the New Teacher Project working with Minneapolis, but it's frequent for most districts. When you have a seniority-based system and you have unrequested leaves of absence and otherwise, generally districts are required to line their teachers up from least senior to most senior, and then they let them go accordingly. What this is trying to do is allow districts, rather than line teachers up by seniority, is to line teachers up by effectiveness in the classroom so you can keep your most effective teachers. And you'll see on, it's page 13, but I am working off the house. For example, Section 2, Article 2, Section 2. At the end of that, you'll see a district must decide to issue a contract to a probationary teacher at the end of their period. And that decision has to be based on the teacher's progress on their professional development growth plan, the teacher's effectiveness ratings that were determined earlier, and then any other local criteria. And again, the idea is to try to recognize and protect the most effective teachers. Page 17 on mine, Section 7 deals with unrequested leaves of absence. And again, these will most often occur if a district is running into a deficit and has to lay people off. And you can see under Clause B, 1 through 6 is the order. Again, trying to, rather than seniority from least to most, order people from, if you will, least effective to most effective. And go in that order.
Madam Chair.
Senator Daley?
May I ask a question?
Can you hold on to your question? I've asked all members to do that just in order to get through the testifiers.
And I'm almost done. Just okay. 3 more.
Please write it down and don't forget. All right. Mr. Bartholomew.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Daley. Just a quick caveat. There is a provision in Section 7, and Ms. Rattel mentioned this in her summary, that a superintendent, the rising star provision, is at the beginning of that under Section 7, and you'll see it's in Subdivision 11, is the rising star provision, if you will.
That's the rising star.
One of the only other things I'll mention is Article 2, Section 13, is a language that would allow a superintendent to assign or reassign a teacher or administrator to a building based on basically that teacher's skill set and the needs of the kids in that building. And I think other than that, I would just highlight the two studies that are Section 15. Did you mention those? Okay, and I won't go into any other detail. But those are the key provisions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I would just
Senator
like,
Olson.
I would like to share a quote from Jeffrey Canada, who started the Harlem Children's Zone, that effectiveness matters. We value teachers. We want the best teacher possible in front of these children because we know the teacher is the number one ingredient in driving performance in schools. But we've got some rules right now that will not keep the best teachers in front of students. And as we have to make tough choices in America, things like the last in, first out, we have to get rid of these kind of issues, which we just get rid of teacher based on seniority and not based on effectiveness. We simply don't have enough money to keep ineffective teachers in classrooms. That was
Thank
a quote of Jeffrey Canada.
Now, Ms. Rattel, did you have something to add at the end of the discussion here on the
Madam Chair, thank you.
Yes.
I would just say, you know, once again, as we've discussed all year, I appreciate you guys putting kids in front of adults and making hard decisions. And none of these things are easy, and we really appreciate your hard work.
Members, just to reiterate, we're going to try and get we have several teachers in the audience that would like to testify. So if you could please keep your questions, and I've been asked to take all those questions at the end today, and we will. We will get your questions. Senator Olson.
I think we have the the first one is not on your list of testifiers is not available. Mr. Pye is a classroom teacher in third grade.
Mr.
And
Pye.
And Leanne Moore, Leah Jones. We could have several of them come up here at a time.
Changes.
We'll have Mr. Pye, Ms. Moore, and Ms. Jones.
And perhaps Mary Donaldson as well.
Ms. Donaldson, please come to the testifying table. Who would like to start? And Mr. Pye, and if you could
Mr.
each
Pye.
Introduce yourselves for the tape, please. Thank you. When it's your turn.
Thank you. Good
Mr.
afternoon.
Pye.
My name is Anand Pye. I teach in White Bear Lake Schools. I'm a resident of Maplewood, and I want to thank Senator Wieger for coming to my classroom, and also Senator Chamberlain, who has come to my classroom before. This is my fourth year in teaching. Prior to this, I worked for nearly 20 years in the private sector in India, Singapore, and United States. So previously it was stated that young teachers are the first ones to let go. I won't be a young one, but I could still be let go. So, I want you to keep that in mind. Culture of performance drives the private sector, and I was part of it. Leadership forecasts to the board and to the investors the goals for the year ahead and breaks it down quarter by quarter. Organizational behavior is then focused to achieving the goals, with the leader being held accountable through quarterly reviews and conference calls. I'm an investor, and so I do pay attention to it. Superintendents and school leaders need to be held accountable for the academic performance of their schools on a similar basis. In the bill that I have read, the focus is on teachers. I am personally supportive of the idea to incorporate student growth in teacher evaluations. I also support parent feedback idea in this bill. The bill suggests that student performance should be at least 50% of a teacher's evaluation. I would favor it being the sole criteria wherever it's applicable. Here are the reasons why. If a teacher who delivers nearly 2 years of growth to the students has to engage with a principal who has pet ideas about teaching and learning, then it defeats the purpose of this bill. Sure. I have personal experience of this, involving more than one principal in my very short career. In addition, if the principal is an ineffective one, there is the very high and real risk of an effective teacher being disrupted by an ineffective principal. This too has happened to me and do not wish to experience it again. Second point, when exclusive representatives and districts agree upon the portion of the teacher's evaluation that is not student performance based, they will agree to continue prior practices. This involves a principal coming into the classroom on a pre-arranged time and evaluating the delivery of a lesson, the arrangement of the room, engagement and behavior of the students during the lesson, and making a variety of written remarks that can sometimes border on the absurd. Like Rome was not built in a day, nor is the performance of student or students. Judging a teacher by anyone observing two or three lessons and only putting those remarks in the personnel file, no matter the effectiveness of the principal, has absolutely no value to the teacher and his or her work the balance of the time. The experience of being judged in this manner in the past and being subjected to it again does not win my support. So I would rather go all chips down and be counted for the results I deliver to my students. I do not see anything in this bill that requires that the compensation be equalized by performance and not by years of seniority. This will allow an ineffective teacher with more experience to earn more than an effective teacher with less experience. For people like me who have come mid-career into teaching and deliver significant student growth, the prospect of disparity in income persisting for the remainder of my career is very discouraging. Adopting the values that drive the private sector should not stop only at deriving the benefits of performance, but should also be rewarded as it would be in the private sector. The bill does change the current practice of seniority as the only criteria in retaining teachers to effectiveness being the only and primary criteria. I support that change and wish to see that evaluation of teachers' work also extended to the compensation part of a teacher. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pye. Ms. Moore?
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
If I could just remind members, we have several more testifiers, so I'll ask you to make your points as concise as possible. Thank you.
I'm just going to give you a quick background about our school so you can kind of understand where I'm coming from and where I've been working, because we are a school who is performance-based pay. So this is my fifth year of teaching at Concordia Creative Learning Academy, and we are on the east side of St. Paul. We're a charter school. 90% of our children are free and reduced. In my classroom, we've got every race under the sky, so we're filled with diversity. I wanted a quick mention. 5 years ago when I walked into my classroom, I honestly had one cardboard box in front of my room, and it was filled with 20 Basel books, just reading books, and that is all I had. So we've really made some huge gains over the past short 5 years. Each time, or three times a year, we evaluate our kids using, they're called NWA tests or the MAP tests, which many schools around the state use. And basically, we drive our curriculum and how we teach based on those scores. So if I have kids who are performing two grade levels, you know, behind, I know we've got to have a lot of remediation and do a lot of extra things to help those kids get to grade level. A couple years ago, we weren't even making AYP. We had failed AYP several years in a row, and we knew right away something had to change. So we started implementing the NWA tests three times a year to assess our kids. Based on these test scores, we are sitting down with our principal, and we evaluate how our kids are doing. Therefore, our pay comes from how my kids are doing. It is almost sickening to me to know that I just read in a PowerPoint just last week that Anoka Hennepin, one of the biggest school districts in the state, the person writing the PowerPoint couldn't remember the last time a person had been let go based on ineffective teaching. So the way we deal with ineffective teaching is they're out of there. I had a student teacher at the beginning of the year. He was terrible. I went and told my principal, and my kids and our kids, Minnesota's kids, cannot waste a day on teachers who are not effective. And by putting some pay based on kids' improvement, CCLA at our school, we've seen huge growth. We are now outperforming the state, where you know 3 years ago we weren't even passing or making AYP. So it has made a huge difference in our school, and I know it could make a huge difference on the other schools around Minnesota too. So,
thank you, Ms. Jones.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Leah Jones, and I am a third grade teacher at Concordia Creative Learning Academy. I have been teaching for 9 years, and five of them have been at CCLA. I've taught in public, private, and charter, and this is the first school where they have used student achievement as part of my evaluation. Our students, like Ms. Moore said, come to us with some of the most unbelievable challenges. Plenty come to us every day, mom's in prison, dad's doing drugs, all of which are plenty of reasons to give up. And yet all of our students have made huge gains. I've heard several people say that, like I said, these are good and valid reasons to give up, but I beg to differ. If we are going to close this achievement gap, the first thing we need to do is to raise the expectations of our students and our teachers. At CCLA, it is understood that these are my students, and these students are my responsibility. They must be at grade level by the end of the year. I tell my students that there are no excuses, and this applies to me too. In order to get such results, I am going to have to go above and beyond what most teachers would say is normal. For example, I teach Saturday school, 9 to 12. I keep my kids back from specials so that they get extra help. And we have given up recess for extra reading time. I don't get paid extra for giving up a prep. I don't always get a prep. I prep Sunday morning. And after all this extra work is put in my time, how do I know my students are learning? It's not based on just one test. It's based on three tests given throughout the year, which is the NWA, as we have mentioned. I use this test to change and modify my lessons based on the needs of my students, and I am evaluated heavily on these scores. It is my opinion that schools that fail to account for differences in effectiveness are unfair to children. Using this kind of data has provided teachers in our school with the opportunity to collaborate more and work together to help our students. If I have a child that needs extra help with some of the second grade strands, then I work with the second grade teacher, and we find ideas and ways to help that child, or maybe even extra time with her students. My husband is an engineer. He works at Boston Scientific, and he works with the team every day. And a huge part of his evaluation is performance-based. Why is his, they will look at why, excuse me, they'll look at how his project was completed. Was it on time? Did he work well with the group? What innovative techniques did he use? Why is it thought that teachers could not be evaluated in the same way? The way CCLA has dealt with ineffective teachers is quick replacement. Our students cannot afford to lose a year because of a mediocre teacher or a teacher who lacks dedication to the field. CCLA has been a lifesaver to many children because we put our students' needs above politics and adult needs. And if you don't mind, I'd like to read something that is on the front of my classroom door, which a few senators have commented on when they visited our classroom. It's titled The Bottom Line. Face it, nobody owes you a thing. What you achieve or fail to achieve in your lifetime is directly related to what you do or fail to do. No one chooses as parent or childhood. But you can choose your own direction. Everyone has problems and obstacles to overcome. But that, too, is relative to each individual. Nothing is carved in stone. If you change anything in your life, if you want, you can change anything in your life if you want it badly enough. Excuses are for losers. Those who take responsibility for their actions are the real winners in life. Winners meet the challenges head on, knowing there are no guarantees, and give it all they've got, and never think it's too late or too early to begin. Time plays no favorites, and will pass whether you act or not. Take control of your life. Dare to dream and take risks. Compete. If you aren't willing to work for your goals, don't expect others to. Believe in yourself.
Thank you. Ms. Donaldson.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for this honor to be here today and to be on the most important committee, I believe, in the Senate right now is education. I don't have much more to say. I think they said it all. But I will just sum it up basically that I'm very blessed to teach with teachers who have embraced the data and making sure children learn in their classrooms. I have a couple graphs that supports what they have said. But first and foremost, I began teaching 30 years ago. And at that time, I ended the year with 9 basals, hoping I would get to geometry by the end of the year. I packed them up and left for the summer. At no time, I knew in my heart that they were learning, but at no time did I have data that showed to me what they needed to learn. And it worked for me, and I suppose it worked for a lot of you. But as we've gone through, and education has changed, children have changed, we deal with statistics such as 67% of my parents did not graduate from high school. 67 of my parents. So somewhere along the line, that method that worked for me did not work for the parents and the children we have now. What is working at our school is data, and using data to know what they have and what they haven't learned. And teachers like this that embrace it, but the thing they missed when they were talking was the professional development that they go through that they don't even realize they do. Data has allowed for an open communication pre-K through 8 in my building. How are you doing that? On my data, these kids aren't learning the fractions. How are you teaching that? They do that every day. And the best people I have found for professional development are my teachers in my building and giving them time. So we are in support of this bill, number one, for the data, but number two, because it's backed by professional development.
Thank you. If you could all stay nearby, because there may be questions for you later, so please be available. Now we have Ms. Ballmer, Mr. Kite, and Ms. Hegard.
Madam Chair?
Yes, and please introduce yourself for the tape.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Karen Baumer with the Minnesota Board of Teaching. I will be very brief because actually and truthfully, the bill as it stands before you falls a bit outside of the purview of the Board of Teaching. So we are we're on the sidelines. We have purview over the license renewal, the issuance of an initial license, and then therefore the license renewal. We believe that, however, there and those need to remain separate, that the local evaluation set forth in the bill as it stands before you right now and the licensing structure need to remain separate but very much aligned processes. And so to that end, we think that what is happening and what's proposed in this bill will seek to inform our work, because we are interested in reforming and redesigning the way we reissue and recognize the further iterations of a teacher's license through their career. And this, the establishment of local evaluation processes will be instructive and helpful to our work, and also the collaborative piece that is set forth, where we are breaking down the silos between teacher preparation and then teachers in the field. There's some language about collaboration a couple times in the bill that we think is important, that we can be pulling in the same direction. So I certainly stand for any questions if you have them.
Thank you. Mr. Kite.
Good afternoon. I'm Charlie Kite. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. We're here to speak in support of this bill conceptually. We're also realists, and we understand that the types of changes being suggested here are very, very challenging to pull off. And in fact, I think that I personally and quite a number of our superintendents have driven the folks that were writing this bill half crazy with suggestions and changes that we felt needed to be made to try to move this bill along. But this bill suggests an important paradigm shift. If we want to be serious about our students being successfully more successful, the linkages that are proposed in this bill have at least a chance of us making that move. We think that all evaluation of our staffs and professional development should be focused on the desired outcomes that we want, and that those most desired outcomes are to produce academically able, well-rounded, and socially well-adjusted students as they leave our school systems. So it's time to bring a much stronger connection between student achievement, the outcome we want, and the evaluation and professional development processes. Now, this bill is still going to take a lot of work to really get in shape, we believe, for passage. But and I think, and I've heard rumors that there may be other bills introduced that have are in a similar vein, and we certainly want to see those as well. But that said, this is the first serious attempt that we have seen to make the paradigm shift that we think is going to be necessary if you really, really want to have students be more successful coming out of our school systems. And for that reason, MASA is rising and saying conceptually we support the ideas that are outlined here. Thank you. We'll
Thank
stand
you.
For any questions.
Ms. Hegard.
Madam Chair, I do have about 5 minutes. I just want to make sure. How do I get this?
Yes, we have a few minutes.
Great. Where do I go? How do I get the slideshow?
Go into your slideshow.
Right there.
Toolbar, yeah.
Madam Chair, as she prepares,
yes.
How long are we going to go?
Senator Wieger. Well, Ms. Hegard is our last testifier in support of 636. We have six testifiers against the bill. I would hope we would be out of here by 5. Thank you for your patience.
Madam Chair and members, I'll be
Ms.
quick,
Hegard.
Actually. And most of you have seen much of this PowerPoint before, so I'm going to click through to the slides that you haven't yet seen. I'm Susan Hegard. I'm with the Bush Foundation, and I'm really happy to be here. And the first thing I need to say to you is that I'm not permitted to, we are not permitted at the foundation to testify in support of any particular legislation. So when I'm listed as supporting the bill, I mean, I think it's really important to know that we're not permitted by law to do that. What I am here to do today is talk with you about evaluation and the importance of it. So one of the critical things I think to think about is that Neither systems nor individuals can know how they're doing or how to improve if they don't have evaluation. So it's just really important to keep that in mind. And when you're thinking about evaluation, the big question mark is why. So why are you evaluating? I was reading a piece by Charlotte Danielson before I came here, and she talks about the importance of really being clear about why it is that you're evaluating. Is it for accountability purposes? Is it to inform hiring, promotion, firing, and that sort of thing, sort of personnel policies for in a district, for example? Or is it for feedback, for professional development, to help a teacher get better at what they're doing? Or is it for both? So I think one important piece here is to think about the purpose of evaluation and why. We have lots and lots of data around us all the time, but the big thing is to really understand how you want to use that data. Then once you figure out what the evaluation is for, then you need to figure out the how part, which is it going to be a test, and are there other means? And a project that we've undertaken at the Bush Foundation has value-added assessment and other measures that are critically important. The Gates Foundation, I just wanted to highlight a piece. If you haven't seen it, their measures of effective teaching that they've been focusing on. They're in the middle of a multi-state, multi-district initiative right now where they're looking at this very thing, evaluation. And they're using test scores, but they're also looking at classroom observations and teacher reflection. They are looking at teacher pedagogical content knowledge, student perception of the classroom instructional environment, and teachers' perceptions of their working conditions and instructional support in their schools. So it's a very holistic approach, which is important, and does involve testing as well. So just quickly to our project, as you know, we've stated that highly effective teachers matter more than any other in-school variable, and it's clear that a student with a high-performing teacher does better than a student without a high-performing teacher. And the heartening thing is that kids can catch up. If they've fallen behind, an effective teacher can catch a student up. This slide illustrates a similar thing, that catch-up can occur, and that highly effective teachers are most critical for students who are at risk and who have fallen behind. Our initiative, we're focusing on 25,000 effective teachers in our three-state area, North and South Dakota and Minnesota, and that they'll replace 50% of today's teachers. So we as a foundation wouldn't be making an investment without having some form of evaluation built into our project. It would be silly, and our board wouldn't allow us to do it. And the goal is to achieve at least 1 year of student academic growth and a year of classroom time. But if students are further behind than that, you need to catch them up more than that. So that's the average. We're working with 14 higher education institutions in the three-state area, a mix of different kinds of institutions, public, private, big, small, research institutions, as well as smaller non-research institutions. So just quickly, I wanted to highlight, we're working with the University of Wisconsin-Madison Value-Added Research Center. They're also working with the Gates Foundation, which is a great advantage for us because we're going to be able to learn from them. We're looking at value-added assessments. In some cases, we're looking at state tests like the MCAs, but we're also using the NWEA, the MAP test, which is used in about 70% of the districts here in Minnesota. We're going to link the data to teachers and the teachers to their students, and then back to the preparation program for the purpose of program improvement. And then there's also the Common Metrics Group, and that's really interesting. That's a group of all of our higher ed partners that have gotten together and figured out what kind of measures they want to use. So this would be under the category of other measures. So this group is looking at, for example, an admissions questionnaire. They're looking at the teacher performance assessment that you may have heard about in this committee. They're also looking at an exit survey. There's a transition to teaching survey, and then there's the first-year supervisor survey. So I think this group that's come together voluntarily in our project from the bottom up is really trying to figure out how best to use evaluation in the project. Finally, I've just noted before when we've been before you that there's a policy environment that's critical. So, how do you make tenure, for example, more meaningful? And assessment ought to be part of that. So with that, I'm speaking quickly. I know that the other testifiers want to have a chance to speak. I have had a handout, and if you'd like to ask me any questions here or later, I'd be happy to respond to those. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Hegard. We have five folks who are on the agenda to testify against this bill. Jan Alsweiger, Jim Smola, Mary Bish, Paul Hamilton, Roger Arneson, and Richard Aronson. Neumeister.
Aronson.
Okay. Okay. We'll have the teachers up first, and then we'll have Ms. Alsweiger finish last.
My name is Madam Jim? Chair and committee yes. members. My name is Jim Smola, and I am the president of the Dakota County United Educators, which represents the teachers and nurses of Independent School District 196. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to testify regarding this bill. First of all, I have to say before I read my prepared remarks, we welcome evaluation. Teachers don't shy away from evaluation. Every district in the state has an evaluation system. This system of evaluation in the staff development program that is used in each district is based on district and staff needs, resources available, and locally adopted policies. This bill would intrude on what district administration, school boards, and local unions determine what works best for them and what is in their students' best interest. To use our district as an example, many years ago, the district administration and the union recognized the need for improving our evaluation system of probationary teachers, strengthening the system to address teachers who may be struggling, and ensuring that we have inter-rater reliability in our evaluation system for all teachers. Inter-rater reliability is the process where a person is observed by multiple people and the results will be the same. We established a joint committee of district administrators, building administrators, and union leaders to address this. We developed a system where each probationary teacher is evaluated 3 times a year during their probationary period. Our plan is based on improving teaching and requires post-observation meetings with the administrator to focus on the observation. For a struggling tenured teacher who has continuing contract rights, we strengthened our intensive assistant program, which includes evaluation and remediation through a peer mentoring system. If a teacher has been identified as struggling by an administrator, the union and administrator work together to develop a plan using a peer mentor that addresses the identified deficiencies. From our experience, this program has been successful by addressing the deficiencies identified by the administrator and allowing the teacher to correct them. It also has allowed the union and district to counsel out teachers who have failed to show improvement. This would never be heard or seen in the public because it's done behind the doors. By incorporating the Charlotte Danielson model in our evaluation system, we established the inter-rater reliability necessary in a common language for our evaluation system. It has added clarity for all parties involved. When QCOMP was enacted, we used our evaluation system as a basis for establishing our QCOMP program. For over 20 months, a joint district and union team developed our plan. What our plan does is focus our staff development needs through the district building and individual teacher goals. Each teacher in our district has to develop an individual growth plan each year with a student achievement goal. These individual plans are drawn upon building goals, which are drawn upon district goals. The student achievement goals that teachers developed are typically drawn from the building goals. Our QCOMP program is a jointly developed program that has as its goal to improve the delivery of instruction, which ultimately improves student achievement. Using the Danielson model, teachers are rated annually and must be at a proficient level to receive a salary increase. Inherent in our plan is the idea we want teachers to stretch themselves professionally and be innovative in the classroom. To reiterate what was earlier said, this bill would be an intrusion on local control and hamper districts such as ours from addressing their local needs regarding an evaluation system and staff development needs. This bill would create unnecessary costs for school districts across the state. In a time when districts are struggling financially and with unfunded mandates, this would be an additional one. The resources school districts would have to dedicate to meet the local requirements and reporting requirements of this bill would take dollars away from students. From a building administrator level, this bill would add unjustifiable work to an already heavy workload. To create a rating system would be costly and create morale issues that are unnecessary and don't improve student achievement or the quality of education. Districts would have to redirect staff and hire additional staff to meet the reporting requirements of this bill. Again, it would not equate to an improvement in a student's education. At that, I would like to thank you for allowing me to testify and hope you consider seriously this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Smola. Mr. Hamilton.
Madam Chair,
Ms. Alzweiger.
Two of the testifiers from Orono will not be here today, so we could move to Jay Anderson if that would be okay. Jay is new and taking their place, excuse me.
I'm sorry, I didn't, and please say your name for the tape.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jay Anderson. I'm a teacher and the local president in the Osseo School District. We entered into the QCOMP program 5 years ago as a district. And basically, like you'd heard the previous testimony from Mr. Smola, we also tailored our performance appraisal system along with our QCOMP program and included our staff development in that. So it's all a personalized type of staff development program for us right now. I've just got a few issues, and I'll highlight the pieces. There's many things I agree with in the bill, and there's others that I don't. Probationary teachers should be included and should have additional support through mentoring with an experienced colleague. We currently have that in place in our district. Administration needs to be more thoroughly trained in evaluation. Evaluation should be done more by more than one individual to ensure inter-rater reliability. Observation should be done on an annual basis. Plans should contain four areas of need. Performance is determined by research-based methods of teacher evaluation. OSSEO uses a combination of Madeline Hunter and Charlotte Danielson's work. Professional growth plans, which should be an individualized staff development program, is determined by the needs of the teachers and the students. Third, student learning goals established by the teacher for their group of students. It should be a stretch goal, so that the bar can be set high to challenge all students. This should not be punitive in nature, as it then tends to lower standards instead of raising them. Fourth, site goals, in which all teachers at the site work toward a common goal collaboratively to improve student achievement. There should be a plan in place to assist teachers who do not meet standards to get to standard or to be dismissed if they cannot attain the standards. We have that in place in our plan and in our district. All plans need to be developed at the local level so they fit the needs of the students and staff in the district. We have a diverse state with many different needs based on the demographics of individual districts, and in one-size-fits-all approach will not work. And lastly, I think that the Department of Education should also develop a plan so if districts do not have the resources to develop their own, they can adopt the state plan. I would urge you to leave this in the hands of the locals and let the locals determine what works best for them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. If you gentlemen could stay in the room, we've got a couple more testifiers that will need to come up to the table, but there may be questions for you. So please don't go far.
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
I'm sorry that the Orono folks are not here because I think in past times I've often lauded them for what I've seen they have done, particularly in their beginning teachers and what they do to mentor and evaluate as they work toward tenure, and then recognize them. I have been to the school board meetings where each of them are presented by their mentor teacher to receive that that step. That recognition, they have their families there. It means a lot. I think the evaluation process and the recognition of it and the staff development plans that go into it are extremely important. And what I have heard here, and I know it would be from the Orono folks as well, many of those elements, I think, are what are being attempted to be captured in this bill, and without taking away some of the local decision-making and autonomy. But so I just wanted to interject that, but I do have high regard for the Orono folks and the work that they've done in this area.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Ms. Alzweiger, and if we could have Mr. Arneson and Mr. Neumeister come up while our testifiers are changing places. All right, Ms. Alzweiger, please go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alzweiger, Education Minnesota. And I just want you to think back to when you were in school. You know that there was a very special teacher, somebody who you thought was very effective. Just think for a minute. What were the characteristics that made that teacher very special or very effective? Do you think that it was the 50% of what it was based on test scores and the improvement of your math grade or reading grade or science grade? I would guess not. My point is, Teacher evaluation is something that teachers take very seriously. Education Minnesota supports quality teacher evaluation. But pulling a number out of thin air and saying 50% is exactly what we should have is not based on research. And I was going to testify on the many pieces of this bill that we do have a problem with, but it really is pointless to talk about all those because everything is based on the 50% tied to a test score. I'll just briefly say we don't support the ranking 1 through 5. We don't support the transfer seniority of the ability for the superintendent. We don't support the 5-year continuing contract. And I could have a whole long testimony about each of those, but I'm not going to because the main issue is, do we really think that 50% of a teacher's evaluation should be on test scores? I'm a former teacher. I had great years, and I had some years that I would not want you to have to deal with. They made me a better teacher, yes. What were my test scores of my students? I can't tell you because I was teaching a long time ago, and we didn't do as well with test scores back then as we're doing now. We all know districts like the NWA. They like the MAP tests. I know Senator Olson likes that as well. We are learning about students and what they can do. I want to read to you from the economic policy briefing paper a statement made by a number of scholars convened to talk about test scores. Eva Baker, Paul Burton, Linda Darling Hammond, and a number of about 6 more people, and I'll be happy to email this study to you. But these are highly respected individuals. Quote, a review of the technical evidence leads us to conclude that although standardized test scores of students are one piece of information for school leaders to use to make judgments about teacher effectiveness, such scores should only be used as part of an overall comprehensive evaluation. Some states are now considering plans that would give us as much as 50% of the weight in teacher evaluation and compensation decisions to scores on existing tests of basic skills in math and reading. Based on the evidence, we consider this unwise. Any sound evaluation will necessarily involve a balancing of many factors that provide a more accurate view of what teachers do in the classroom and how that contributes to student learning. If this system is perceived as unfair, will your best and brightest teachers stay in those subject areas that we want them to do the best at or we want to measure the most? Science, math, reading. If the educators feel that these tests are not accurate, not valid, valid is the most important figure or term, they're not going to stay. We're going to lose some of our best teachers because they don't want to be rated in those statewide assessments. Do you know that one of Education Minnesota's major goals about 5 years ago, some of the legislators who have been here for a while remember Senator Stumpf when we had the profile of learning, and we transferred over, and Senator Olson certainly remembers this, and we transferred over to the new standards. Do you know that the statewide assessments were published in the newspapers based on the new, with the old tests and new standards? In other words, for at least 1, maybe 2 years, the figures that were produced, put out in the papers, were not reflective of what the teachers were supposed to be teaching. It gets to the point of validity. We all know that at times tests do not exactly measure the right things. Yet we are going to take 50% of the test scores and tie them to a teacher's evaluation. And in this bill, that ties it to licensure, it ties it to ranking, it ties it to continuing contract, it ties it to where they're going to be teaching in the next year. Teachers are very good people. They went into teaching not to become rich. They went into teaching because they want to be collaborative. They want to work with other teachers to do the very best for kids. Have you ever thought about this? Including in your bill something like this. There's, I believe, a researcher by the name of Hirsch out of North Carolina.
Ms. Alzawiger, if you could just confine your comments to this legislation before us, please. We have a number of other testifiers that we need to get to. But we'd love to hear it later. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'll tell you that in this bill, missing, I think, is the resources. What resources do teachers need to teach? You've got surveys in this bill. Having surveys of teachers about working conditions, about resources, tools, materials, do they have everything available to them to do the job would be something you could add to the bill. And so with that, I'll go back to my original question. That teacher that you thought was very effective, very special, what rating would this bill give that teacher? Do you know? Would it be accurately measured? And would it be fair? And I'd be more than happy to answer any questions that you might have. Thank you, Madam
Chair. Thank you, Ms. Alzweiler. We'll take questions at the end. Mr. Arneson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Roger Arneson. I represent the Elementary and the Secondary School Principals Association. I appreciate the opportunity to testify here on behalf of the school principals about this bill. One of the initial difficulties on this is we didn't get a really good choice. I mean, you had to be for it or against it. And when I talked to staff, it was, are you for it or against it? The form says, are you for it or against it? And Mr. Kite kind of begged the question, said he was for the concept. And problem is that ultimately we're going to have a bill, and how do we deal with that? And some things I want to raise for you that school principals will have concerns about. One is process. And I hate to quote Charlie Kite twice, but at first he said, the folks that are writing this bill, I've been driving them crazy. And that's one of the problems with this issue is that the language, and it's not the chair's fault. I think that she's actually gotten this going, and that's a very, very good thing. But the language on this hasn't been circulated a lot. And my intention now, the first time that I got a copy of the language was this morning, is to send that out to school principals and get some feedback for you about what we think works in this and what doesn't. A couple of things on the front end that you need to be aware of, that you need to explore. Is value-added testing the magic bullet for employment decisions? Fundamentally, this bill says it is. And I think there's a lot of research out there that says it's not. But you need to decide that, because where you fall on that is what you're going to have to defend in this particular process. The study that Ms. Alzweiger was talking about concluded that you should not use value-added testing to make high-stakes employment decisions with teachers. But that's a good question. I think you want to know about that. And there's some new stuff that followed up the Bill and Melinda Gates study on that, some by some of the researchers who worked on that study, that said that the data that they got out of the study didn't match up with some of the conclusions. It's an ongoing discussion. That stuff is brand new, just January that's being discussed. But you need to come to grips with that question. At this point, school principals are not comfortable to say that value-added testing is a magic bullet when it comes to evaluation. Second, on the probationary teacher piece in this, and this bill has about five different components, but on the probationary teacher piece on this, some of that looks to us like a solution in search of a problem. Current law says we can non-renew probationary teachers, and the words in the statute are, as the board sees fit. We don't think we could have more power than that when it comes down to that on an annual basis. And the statute adds some very prescriptive provisions in here. Local districts could do those if they want to, but it seems inconsistent with how you view these issues in the past on mandates and some of those kind of questions. And I don't know that the case has been made that we have an issue with probationary teachers. We like being able to assign people where we want to assign them. I'm sure I can tell from the way you're leaning there. It's time to wrap it up. We appreciate the opportunity to do this. We'll circulate this with more people, and we will continue to participate in the discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Arneson. And this is the first step, and this is a perfecting process, and that's what we're hearing today. Mr. Neumeister, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rich Neumeister. For those folks that may not know myself, that are new, I'm someone who has been a leading advocate on privacy, open government here for 30-plus years here at the legislature for no money at all. I want to bring your attention on page 6, which is the House version, or whatever it is. It's done, and particularly Subdivision 5 and Subdivision 6, lines 612 through 635. Information is power. Whoever
Mr. Neumeister, let's just find it here on the Senate version. We don't have the House file.
I don't. I'm sorry.
So what?
It's the same pages, isn't it?
Well, I'm going to.
What section is it?
Subdivision 5.
Page
6, Subdivision 5, and Subdivision 6.
Members, page 6, starting at 6.7.
All right, where it says data gathering and analysis and reports. Information is power. Information can be used to upset the balance of power or sharing of power or of whatever you might want to call. And in this process, there is an antagonism to evaluate people. There's a suspectability to the institution of who does evaluations. And what information is gathered and shared with people can have an impact on individual lives. So I want to share with you some things that I think you might want to think of. It is not clear to me whether in this proposal that you're saying that teachers' names should be public also with the evaluation. When you put the word non-public in there, which is on that Ms. Olson knows about, under Chapter 13 you're saying basically nobody will have access to it. The teacher would not have access to it or whatever. So in the process, I don't know how if the information is going to be used to rate somebody 1 through 5 or a word describing, there should be some kind of process to get access to that raw data that's to be used. So as just speaking with some charter teachers here before the hearing, they would like to maybe their name and their rank be public. But I don't know what the intent of the author is, because nationwide this has been an issue. And I don't know how it's being read with the Data Practices Act on this section. The other thing is that no matter what, there needs to be accountability and transparency in K through 12, whether it be charter or public. So as this bill goes forward, if you are not going to go, or if it's clarified what the intent is, not to release names of teachers and what their ranking may be or whatever, you should have some type of summary report for that individual school that helps the parents who are sending their kids to the public school or the charter school in general. How are the professionals at that school? And so it's a big debate that's happening across the country. But again, the key thing is data, who has access to it, who is using it, and that everybody should be able to know on the playing field. And it should be a balanced approached, not one superintendent's schools over the teachers or the teachers over the superintendent and the administration. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, just wanted to bring those out to you, because sometimes those can be little cogs in the wheel that you may not see right away, but it's important to see, I think, up front.
Thank you, Mr. Neumeister. Members, I want to thank you for your patience. In education circles, we would call this a mind dump, and it's not the best way to actually teach.
Dump?
But I want to thank you all for your patience in really hanging on to those good questions you have. And I believe we have all of our testifiers in the room. I have a couple before you. The first senator, I think, had a question with Senator Scheid. Might you remember what that was? I apologize.
Madam
Chair. It was a long time ago.
I sort of do.
All right, and who would you
and
like
I really
to
needed to
the
ask it at the time
to?
Because I don't think it matters anymore, but it had to do with when Mr. Bartholomew was there and they were talking about something that wasn't in the amendment that was in the original bill, and I thought perhaps it would be really helpful to me
because I can't read both here right now.
Okay.
Would have been helpful to know what are the essential differences between the two, but maybe
Ms.
you
Rattel?
Can tell me what that was, that one thing anyway.
Yes, Madam Chair and Senator Scheib, the main difference between the first version that you have and the delete all amendment is the changing from using a licensure, a tiered licensure, to having a status designation because of the potential property issues with, you know, changing people's licensure.
Okay. Understand that.
All right, thank you. Senator Daley.
Madam Chair, thank you. Kind of ties nicely into what the final comment was by Rich Neumeister, and it has to do with data and privacy and how open are we with this. With the exemplary status, the distinguished status, the advanced status, highly effective, effective average, is that public? As a parent, would I know what the teacher is if they're exemplary so that I could try to get my student into that exemplary teacher, or is that not something that would be published? How is that data handled, that the classifications?
Ms. Rattel.
Madam Chair and Senator Daley, the way that this bill currently is, that is private data that only the school boards and the Department of Education would have. The intent is to not have a situation like that happened in California where you have every individual teacher's name printed with their evaluations. I think the idea is as we move forward and as we get all the details finalized, then some of those things could be addressed. And, you know, how does that look? There is a section in the bill that does have each school. It's on the school card, the school report card section, has each school report how many teachers they have in each section of, like, each different status rating. So let's see if we can... Yes, Article 2, the very beginning, which I believe is on page 11 for you guys, there's a section added about halfway through there that says the number of teachers in each performance effectiveness rating category by school site. So you would know kind of the overall status of the teachers within a school, but you wouldn't be able to know the different ones of the individual teachers. And, you know, the idea is that the school board and the, you know, Department of Ed would be able to, you know, get all of those teachers up to a high enough level that it wouldn't matter which teacher your child had; they're all being effective.
One quick follow-up question,
Mr. Daley, Senator Daley.
The local rating of 5, 4, 3, 2. Maybe I missed that. Could you describe that just a little bit? How that's determined? How that factors into highly effective, effective average?
Ms. Rattel.
Madam Chair and Senator Daley, that's purely developed by the local district or charter school. The only requirements under that are the two principal evaluations and the parent survey. So the details, and even the details of how much the principal survey or the principal evaluation and the parent survey are worth, is not defined.
Thank you. Members, just so you know, I have two more senators up, Senator Thompson, Senator Han. The idea here is to lay this on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. All right. Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to ask Ms. Jones a question, if I could, please.
Just heard testimony.
Ms. Jones.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Ms. Jones, thank you.
Senator Thompson.
I was taken by your testimony that you're at a school where you're having very successful outcomes with the student. My immediate thought was, what kind of students do you have? That was going to be my first question, and you answered that. It sounds to me like you've got a typical school that might be one we'd be concerned about with you. You talked about a high incidence of free and reduced lunch students, these kinds of things. I believe you said there's a fair amount of diversity, those kinds of things in the school, addressing those achievement gap kinds of issues. What immediately occurred to me is, how are you getting it done in better in comparison to other schools, and what's going on there?
Thank you for the opportunity to speak on that. I guess I think there are two reasons why I'm able to get the results that I am. just to give you a quick background, though, we have 98% free and reduced. We have a lot of kids that come to us with from other schools that have failed at previous schools and have been truly successful at our school. I think that happens for two reasons. One, we work our tail off. And I know that teachers will tell you, yes, we work hard, but I don't think you understand exactly what my daily routine entails. I'm there before school starts most days, an hour, maybe more before, or I stay an hour, maybe two, maybe three after some days. I give up preps to tutor students, which is I wasn't able to do at previous schools, which I'll touch on later. My students stay after school because they would like to be able to get their homework done in a quiet place. They ask to stay. I stay with them to work with them. I take them home. Like I said, they're my students. My day doesn't end at 4. My day ends when I feel that all of my students' needs have been met. When I have my students that have completed their homework or had that extra reading time, that's when my day is over. I'm able to do that because I don't have a principal or I don't have any overhead telling me that I can't. My director will tell you if it's good for kids, you do it. And that's what I do every day. I come to work, ready to work, and I throw my whole heart into it. They're my responsibility. That means if my students need to stay late, I do. I'm not out at 4. I've been in schools. My other reason for being able to accomplish my things is I truly believe it's because I'm not part of a union. I've been part of a union before, and I've had those constraints put on me where I'm not able to stay late and do those things. If I want to tutor on my prep, I'm not able to because I was told in order to do that, I have to be paid, and they can't pay me to do that. If I want to do extracurricular things after school, I have to be paid, and they can't pay those things. I've had to take students to libraries off, you know, meet them at libraries in order to tutor, in order to do those things. And I have tons of other teachers that I work with at CCLA that have left CCLA and come back for similar reasons. I'm able to do all of these things because I'm not put in a box with only certain things that I can do or cannot do.
Thank you, Ms. Jones. I believe I saw Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Rattel. I hope you can answer. I'm a little concerned about the structure of this, and I remember talking with Mr. Bartholomew about this earlier when the bill was being crafted, just the complexity of the structure that it entails and how that is managed and how we know, have assurance that those things are being done. At some point, there will be some additional cost to the state in the form of higher pay for certain teachers that have reached a certain status. What is the mechanism that is envisioned to provide that? How will the state know that a particular teacher or group of teachers has achieved that status and will then have a higher cost or a higher pay as a result of that? How will that be determined?
Ms. Rattel?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Hahn. I think there's a few different things kind of happening at once. First, the implementation piece. That is a very important piece, obviously, to all of this, which is why it takes place over a number of years. Also, at the very back of the bill and the delete all, there's now an assessment kind of task force to address and do any recommendations that are needed as the implementation goes forward. If there's things that need to be tweaked here and there, that would recommend it back to the legislature. I'm trying to think of the next thing you said. Remind me the second part of your question, please. Well,
Senator Hahn.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Mr. Tella, just the money component that's tied to the evaluations, and how will the department know which teachers are subject to that, and what will be the information that will be provided? How will they be able to assess that? Are they going to take the word of the school district and say, well, we have 10, so you owe us 10 times whatever?
Mr. Tell.
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn is asking is how will that data get so we can see it on a spreadsheet?
Well,
Ms. Rattel.
Affect what goes on in the districts.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Hand. There's two different things that will happen. One, the report that's required within this bill requires that not only is the teacher's effectiveness rating and the local district rating reported, but also what the local framework is, so that if, you know, school district X uses 100% self-evaluation for their 50% and another one uses some other, you know, more particulars that are broken down, say, by 10% each, that would be very clear. It also allows for the pilot year to kind of fix things if they need to be. As far as for the state knowing how many teachers need to pay that, the idea is that the report over the next, you know, 3 years, or really till 2019, because that's the first time that the bonuses could be paid, any adjustments that need to be made would be made to ensure that people that are getting to that level are deserving of it and that their students are moving ahead in those kind of jumps. Because the key component here of the student data, you can't really argue with that. You either make it or you don't. And if, you know, teachers are getting, say, a 3, which is the average rating for their student data, yet their district is, you know, qualifying them as highly effective, that's a clear, you know, violation, really, of this law.
Senator Torres, right?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of questions, Ms. Rattel. I would like to know, there was some mentioning about how the language that we have here related to evaluation actually connects to the value-added testing and how you plan, you know, it's just not clear in the language, and I don't know if that was entertained or discussed, you know, with anybody. I know that the department, obviously you know this as well, has done extensive review on this and talk about evaluation and really figure out, you know, how do they connect that to the actual academic outcome in different schools for different children, and whether or not value-added testing is actually, you know, what we need to incorporate in order to do evaluation. And also training like QCOMP and how those three pieces are connected to teacher evaluation. Could you tell me if you have worked with the department on trying to figure out those pieces?
Ms. Rattel.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Torres-Ray. We have discussed this bill with the department. They're still working through it on defining where they kind of land with it and which parts of it they're fully supportive of, which parts they want to work more on. As far as the value added goes, that's something that, you know, we looked at the work, say, that the Bush Foundation is doing and ensuring that, you know, their teachers, the money that they're giving to the teacher preparation programs, those prep programs ensure that their teachers were getting at least 1 year growth on average for their students. So trying to really do this full circle linking of teacher preparation programs to the teachers, to the students that are in their classroom, and making sure that, you know, all of this value added is getting added back in together and really being addressed and used as the basis. You know, if it's a subject that is outside of the statewide assessment area, that's where you get into the teacher created, administrator approved type of models, and how that would work under growth is definitely something we're still looking at, and we're trying to work with some people at the University of Wisconsin who specialize in growth research to really finalize and fine-tune that section.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I have another
Torres,
question.
Right.
Thank you. On page 24, on section 16, you have advisory task force, and I would like to know, you have three groups, the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, the Minnesota Business Partnership, and the Minnesota Assessment Group. So I have a couple of questions. I don't know who the Minnesota Assessment Group actually, I don't know who they are. If you could tell us a little bit about their connection to education. And also, why is that you feel that we need to have these three groups included?
Ms. Rattel.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Torres-Ray. Quite honestly, this was not a section that we worked on. This was a section that was brought to both Senator Olson and Representative Peterson to address some of the implementation issues over the next few years. And if there are things that need to be tweaked, how do you actually have people that are sitting in a room talking about it over the summer when the legislature is not in? If something comes up, who do you go to? And I know that both the Chamber and the Business Partnership have been, you know, working with a large coalition on this bill. So I'm imagining that's why we were included in it. As far as Minnesota Assessment Group, I frankly do not know why they were included or what their role was in getting this language added.
Senator Olson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think Mr. Bartholomew says he believes it's a group that the department has to advise them. I'm not sure if that's the exact title. They do have an assessment and accountability stakeholders group, and I would think that would be the logical one, unless they've got another one lurking in the weeds too that would be related to this.
Follow up, Madam Chair. Thank you. I just wanted to make sure, because I want to get a clarification on that, because I couldn't find them. I tried to look and figure out who they are and what their connection is to education, so I would like to get a clarification. And also, just to Ms. Jones, I want to make sure I can't pass this, Madam Chair. I have a teacher, I have a sister who actually is a teacher, and is a union teacher, and I have criticized my sister a lot for staying after working hours and working on weekends on projects related to school. And I know for a fact that she has never been told by the union, by her principal, by anybody in the school that she cannot spend time after working hours on working on school projects for her kids. That has never happened. And I also know a lot of friends that are union teachers that spend a lot of time in extracurricular activities and after school time, and they have never been told. I'm pretty sure that they cannot stay and do that, and I see that happening quite frequently, actually, in Minneapolis. So I think it's really not appropriate to say that the unions are telling teachers that they are not supposed to stay and they are not supposed to work overtime, because actually that's not accurate.
Senator Torres-Ray, we're in the business of providing quick information here. Ms. McQuay can tell you all about the organization that you're interested in.
Madam Chair and Senator Torres-Ray, I believe that the Minnesota Assessment Group is defined in statute under 120B365. It's referred to there as the Assessment Advisory Committee, and I believe it's the same group.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Yes, Stand. Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a few comments. I feel strongly that we do need to have a teacher evaluation system, and this is something that we worked on last year, and I actually authored some legislation with regard to this. And so I wanted to, Madam Chair, send some of this to you, because one of the things that was included were things that I got specifically from a woman by the name of Mary Catherine Richter, who heads up the St. Paul Teachers Union, and she had done a tremendous amount of work in this area and talked about the importance of using multiple measures, and that is defined, and the importance of including whether or not teachers reach out to the larger parent community and measuring the parent community engagement in the school. Having a process for intervention, having a process for mentoring. It was pretty comprehensive, and we didn't actually, we went through it so quickly because we were doing this race to the top stuff, and so, and then, as you recall, our work was cut short. So, Madam Chair, I wondered if you would be, and the members might also be interested in seeing some of that as we consider, and perhaps the governor's folks might be going in some of that direction as well. So I understand this is being laid over and there'll be lots of things considered, but wanted to put that on the table. And then the other thing I just wanted to mention is, while Ms. Jones's comments were certainly just her perception, and any testifier can say any of that, I'm particularly sensitive at this point because of what's going on nationally, in particular in our neighboring state, and I know I've mentioned this before, but I have a goal that we in the Minnesota legislature refrain from it's the labor versus non-labor, that we're all in it together and we're trying to solve these challenges, and we respect and honor our teachers and those of us trying to work on this, as well as the public.
Thank you, Senator Bonoff. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Bonoff. Thank you, and I appreciate if you would resurrect that to jog some of our memories and introduce it to others. I think this has been a good experience, and for me I know there's been a lot of hard work that has been going into this work in progress, and I think we've heard a lot of good ideas that have been both from both sides of the issue, because you know, nobody was absolutely totally against everything or in some cases totally for everything. So I think that says something. I think we recognize the extreme importance of evaluation and the opportunity for professional growth, the desire of teachers to have that and have it be done in a planful way that is respectful. We've got, and I just, if you'll recall to some of the comments I made earlier in our earlier bill of the what Dr. Reed Lyon had said about the importance in terms of implementation of anything, that, you know, it does take leadership, it takes buy-in to that, it takes, you know, the professional development is an extremely important component, and there's, you know, we were hearing there's a different stages, there's whether, how much can be a framework that allows total, you know, much more local autonomy. That was a message that was coming through, and many of us believe in that. I think we, hopefully, after hearing all of this, that we can look at all of the, all of us can look at this with some fresh eyes, if you will. They get a little cloudy after a while with all of the stuff going on, and continue to work on this. I wouldn't proclaim that this is ready for inclusion as it is precisely now, and I'm not sure if anybody's claiming that. But I think it is a direction we need to go. I think people are asking for it. I think that it can be a means of building respect for teachers. And but I don't want it to be something that teachers feel they have to be afraid of. That bothers me sometimes when teachers have an insecurity that believes if something is evaluated or brought out that somehow they are going to be determined to be inadequate, because I think that it's the other way around for the most part. And so how we do go about building confidence but having a procedure that works toward that end and achieves the result that is going to get the respect of the folks that support this system and expect.
Thank you, Senator Olson. I'll just say that I heard today on NPR that the Obama administration is looking at, as it rewrites the Education Secondary Funding Act, looking at some sort of teacher performance. And I think I might have heard the 50% amount as well as far as a student achievement tied to compensation. So you're not alone.
Madam Chair, if the federal government is for it, then maybe I'm against it.
Well, let's just say it's bipartisan.
Madam Chair.
We have bipartisan support here from all places.
Madam
I believe
Chair?
There's two more senators that would like to speak. Senator Stump?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Senator Bonhoeff, for your comments about Wisconsin. I'd hate to flee or run to Iowa or have to run to Iowa. So. I was just visiting with my good colleague, Senator Nienau, and on page 9 under that Section 8, I thought we had repealed that 2% in a previous bill. And I was just wondering that, you know, it would be, and I think Senator Olson would also feel that it would be befitting if I mentioned how important staff development would be for greater Minnesota. And I went back after, I think, my last comment about the QComp and looked up all of the schools that are on QComp and how most of them are actually not in greater Minnesota. So I think any provision relating to staff development or changes to staff development, really we need to consider schools that are in greater Minnesota as well, that how important that staff development is, and whether it's QComp or whether it's the 2% or whatever, we need to be sure that that stays in place. My other comment is that I think Mr. Aronson mentioned it or alluded to it. If we put something like this in place, is it going to be a heavy burden for individual schools and school districts, whether they're charter schools or whether they're public schools, or is it going to be something that's that they can do in a reasonable fashion, and I'm not putting it out there as a question, it's more of a statement. I think if you look at most other areas of professional people, whether they're doctors, lawyers, accountants, pilots, you name it, the professional development component, they get licensed, and they don't get I think driving is about the only one where you get a permit, but then you get a license a couple years later. But you end up becoming licensed, and then you can get extra certifications, or whether you're a doctor or physician or whatever, to do certain added things. And most of these professions have a continuing education component to them, so that you have the opportunity to keep in touch or in tune with the current practice or new practices that are coming into vogue or whatever. So I think we want to keep it as simple as possible and put some of the burden of the responsibility not just on our schools and school districts, but also on the higher education end of it. That, and I know Ms. Hegart mentioned the Bush component, which I totally agree with. I mean, there ought to be a heavy burden of responsibility on that higher education component, because these young men and women are spending huge amounts of money to become teachers or to become whatever their training is. And then look to the Board of Teaching to do some of the good part of the legwork for maintaining the fact that they have to either take certified programs that help them after they get their licensure. So I'm not saying that this, I think this is a good start, but I'm hoping that it doesn't become such a burden on our schools and school districts that they become just totally overburdened with it.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Stump, thank you for that. Number one, that 2% set aside, it was passed, it hasn't become law. Current law is still here. In this proposal, actually, many of the sections that are in here are relating to current law and trying to enhance and not exactly tighten up, but keep the focus of staff development on the improvement of the instruction with the idea of student achievement. And some of the things that have it be, there's some evidence that they might, in fact, work toward that end. Some of the provisions that have been in there are deleted. And we've had some attempts like that in the past, but they're dealing with that current law. I appreciate your bringing up about the continuing education. A lot of the staff development, I think, is looked at as being incorporated within the work of the school district and in the professional development. Many of the things that the illustrations of other professional development, it's the responsibility of the individual to keep up their own professional, whether it's doctors or it may not be anybody else covering that, lawyers or other areas that need that, both whether it's for licensure but also for their own improvement. So there's a balance there, too, in terms of what is expected of people. But, your point's well taken. And I think this staff development, we know, is a very important component of the QCOMP as well. A lot of these things interplay, and we've got a lot of work to do if we're going to keep those functioning to get at our goal of improving student achievement and closing the achievement gap through quality teaching and teachers.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Cruz.
Well, I just had Madam Chair, Senator Olson, just had a couple of quick comments. I agree. I think with the idea of the bill, I think we do need some kind of enhanced evaluation, simply for the fact that our children are too priceless a commodity to do anything but make sure that they have the best teachers. We had an amazing presentation by the Florida delegation. It was probably a couple of weeks ago now. It seems like an eternity. I was just wondering if you could speak to, and it's okay if you don't know the answer to this, because I honestly can't remember without looking at the PowerPoint myself, but Could you talk a little bit about the similarities or differences between what we have in front of us and what Florida was doing? And the reason I ask that is because it seemed like what they were doing was effective. And I guess in my mind, you know, if that's a path that has shown it can be successful, we should follow that path.
I'm going to let Ms. Rattel.
Ms. Rattel.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Cruz. I actually had the same conversation with them as they were leaving, so that's why I know the answer to this. They currently use 50% of student data to evaluate their teachers. However, last year it did not get signed by their governor. I don't know if you remember, it was a big deal, and now they have a new governor, and the basis of his platform during his election was that he would have signed that bill. So now it is once again moving through the legislature, and it's likely going to be put into place. But they also have a lot of different systems that they use throughout, and they've been using student data to do so much in classroom things like the third grade literacy pieces that this isn't as big of a shift for them as it will be for Minnesota.
Thank you, Ms. Rattel. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Olson, I have a question about process, because this is not the first bill that you have said that you would like to continue to work on, that this is something that you envision just kind of moving throughout and getting more input, or I don't know really what that means. So in the past, and you know, I remember I had a lot of bills that I brought to our chair and were in the same shape, and he said, until it's ready, go out and meet with people, talk to the commissioner, figure out what's going on, and then bring it to committee because I just need to make a decision. And that was kind of how I was trained to work in this committee. But I don't know. What is the process? When you say that you envision a process for more work and more input, is it that members are going to be invited to provide input? Are we going to work with people, with the commissioner and other people in the field, that you want to put a committee to work on this? Or what does that mean? What's going to happen to this bill, and are you planning to bring it back? Or
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There are a lot of things kind of up in the air right now. Obviously, we've got some deadlines for our budget bill, which will include some policy. But I think we also have some freedom to do some other options, because we will be continuing policy debates beyond the time when our first budget bills go out. So right now, I don't know that I can commit to you one way or the other. Part of it is going to be whether we feel this is ready for inclusion at this time, at which time we will have a further discussion as we were dealing with that bill. But I can't be more specific than that. But I don't want to, I'm not a railroad type.
Thank
with
you.
That, follow up. I believe Senator Olson moves her bill to be laid on the table.
Before you do that, Madam
inclusion.
Chair, if I may do a follow-up comment,
yes,
please.
Yes, Senator Torres, right.
The reason I said this, Senator Olson, is because I believe that these are really core elements, and I've said this to Ms. Rattel and to the people who came to my office to talk about this bill. I think that these are very important issues, and I believe that all of us in this committee have very strong opinions about it and want to work with you on this and these and many other things that you want to bring before this committee. And I would like to really have an opportunity to interact with members.
Absolutely.
To hear more about, you know, how do we get to this place, because I think we want to get there. Mm-hmm. So I just want that to be on the record, that I want to work on this, I want to work with you on this and many other pieces, and I would like to have that opportunity to perhaps be in a committee that is a bipartisan committee, working with the different groups that are working on it, with the commissioner, with educators, and really figure out how do we do the work kind of behind the scenes and bring it to the committee and do that work on behalf of this committee.
Thank you, Senator
and
Torres-Ray.
Madam Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, I think that feel free to, you know who has been vested in this. Communicate those ideas. We have a hard time getting a lot of meetings going, getting together on that. So we may be limited in how many organized groups during this process, but I think that doesn't have to stop communication from flowing and ideas, and you have them, and please share them.
Mm-hmm. Senator Harrington.
I am delighted to see the bill finally come out. In police work, the big transformation over the last decade really looks a lot like what this bill purports to at least start. The idea is that we use statistics to measure, to reward, and then to hold accountable the managers and the practitioners in the profession. So I'm delighted to see this moving into the education field as it has in police work, where it really was truly transformative. There's a couple of questions that I do have in mind. Number one is the issue of computer system development as to how that's going to happen. That was one of the major stumbling blocks in making this work. Was how did you get the numbers, how did you get accurate numbers, accurate data, so that you're going to be making decisions on reward and accountability in an accurate fashion. The second piece is that I'm concerned about is can we tie this student, not just student achievement overall, but shrinking of the achievement gap into this reward system or into this ranking system. From the communities of color, I think that is going to be key for us. Is it's not just a matter of the saying that all the boats are going to rise. We're very specifically interested in seeing children of color where the achievement gap is worse, seeing those teachers producing the results and shrinking that achievement gap. To me, that's what an exemplary teacher is going to look like, is a teacher that does that. And then the last piece, which is not really a question, but just more an observation, is I like the idea of having the study to check to see really how does diversity in the classroom and how do the schools that recruit for diversity, how do they stack up? Because in my experience as an urban cop, those departments that worked hard to make sure that their police force represented and reflected the population they served got far better results than those communities that didn't do that. So I am very supportive of this. The computer question, I think, is one that is going to be probably take longer to answer than we have tonight, but that would be part of the development and the studies also. If we can have further conversation on that, I would really like to have that.
Thank you.
Senator Harrington, if we can address that later then.
I'm fully cognizant of the time and probably as anxious to go as anyone. So.
All right. I believe we have Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Olson, and I'm just looking through, it looks like a lot of the effective dates are pushed out past the next biennium, but is there a fiscal note on the impact on school districts in implementing this or with the Board of Teaching and the new requirements for the department, what the fiscal impact will be?
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Sieben. I believe with the changes, not tying it directly to licensure, the Board of Teaching came on board both as supporting, and I think it also took care of the cost. It would have been costly for them, and I think that was the main impact. I haven't seen if there is. I don't have a fiscal note here.
Mr. Nauman, do we have a fiscal note?
Madam Chair, members, I don't believe that we do at this point. I think one's been requested, but I don't think the work has yet been completed.
So by the next time you have an opportunity to hear this bill or vote on it, there will be a fiscal note.
Yes, and Madam Chair, I think it would be important for us to, in light of the amendment, pull back the old request and put in a new one.
Okay.
And Madam Senator Chair, Nauman. Just to follow up.
Senator Sieben.
And I think I understood, but just because I'm new to the committee. So is your intent, Senator Olson, that if this moves forward, it would be in the omnibus bill, or do you mean that it will move separately on its own at a later date? Or I guess I'm just trying to evaluate what our different opportunities are for input and other stakeholder groups' opportunities for input.
Madam Chair and Senator Sieben, that's an issue that we've got to try to resolve. We're not sure how the House is wanting to construct. I'd heard things that they were going to have separate policy bill with budget, and maybe not. That hasn't been pinned down, so that and that will tell a little bit more. I know there was talk about more independent bills. We've gotten one so far, but we've had several in the Senate. The House has not necessarily done that. So we do have to work out some things with the other body, too, in terms of the structure and how this will move forward. And I can't give you a straight answer, but as soon as I get one and have a sense of what that direction is, I will communicate with you.
Senator Olson, for the time being, might you want to renew your motion to lay this bill on the table, and we will take it. We're not sure where it will go from there.
It stays in this committee.
In this committee.
And Madam Chair, at some point, too, not now, obviously, but if it is going to move forward, I'd like to hear from the department their thoughts on it.
So noted. Mm-hmm. All right. Not seeing any other comments. First, let me, Senator Olson renews her motion to place this bill on the table. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Opposed, no. Bill's on the table. Let me thank
you,
the committee for their patience and their diligence tonight and their discipline. I think it shows that we all know how important an effective teacher is to educating our students. So thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.